Carter's has your family covered for every summer first. First steps, first swim lesson, or first sleepover. Our clothes help kids and parents have their best summer ever, thanks to comfy design and easy dressing details. Generations of families have trusted our must-haves for babies, toddlers, and kids. Designed to shine season after season. Visit Carter's.com to shop the latest styles or find a Carter's store near you.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Spring is finally here, and it's that time of year when plans start becoming real. Trips are getting booked, the calendar is filling up, and the energy is shifting. Make this season count. By starting right now, you'll hit summer already feeling more confident speaking and understanding a brand new language. Whether you're prepping for a dream vacation, reconnecting with your family heritage, or just finally checking learn a new language off your bucket list, Rosetta Stone is the way to go. They've been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years because they skip the boring stuff. There's no memorizing random vocabulary lists or leaning on chunky translations. Instead, their intuitive method helps you naturally absorb the language by connecting words and visuals to real-world meaning. It's about learning in context, the way language was actually meant to be learned. As a trusted expert with millions of users, Rosetta Stone offers 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. It really is the ultimate tool for genuine growth. Ready to start learning a new language this spring? Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/rs10 now and begin your language learning journey.
Welcome in. Good morning to the Going Low Show. It is me, Chris Muller, coming to you live from a home office for the second straight week. I'll tell you in a minute that we will not be coming live from a home office for three straight weeks. With an audience of two very scared dogs in the room with me, and as last week, a six-year-old in the other room who seems to know not to come in here, and hopefully a not crib escaping three-year-old. So we've got a almost three-year-old, I should say. We've got a very lively menagerie around us here, as far as spectators for today's show. I would say happy Saturday morning of golf to you. But given the storms that pass through, unless you like playing in a kayak, it might be a little difficult to get out to the course today. You might have to limit your golfing to simulators, watching on TV, or poring over the latest data to try to make sure you have the right Masters pick. But needless to say, as there always is on this show, we've got a ton to get to, and I'm glad you're with me. So good morning. Hope you've got your coffee. Let's settle in and go. I will tell you first that the reason this will not be the second of three straight home shows for me is because we will be taking Going Low on the road for its first on-location show next week. Right smack dab before moving day on the Masters, we will be at Totter Ridge Golf Course. Very excited for that. Big fan of Totter Ridge. A course that every time I play it, I'll be honest, I think I can go out and get Totter Ridge today. There's a couple holes here that are going to be a problem for me. Seven has always been a bugaboo. Seven always intimidates me off the tee because it plays with your mind and it messes with your eye as a golfer. And then I would say, maybe 16's kind of a tough one, or 15's kind of a tough one. 17 can mess with you if you're trying to get too heroic. Love Totter Ridge, though, and I feel that way every time I go out there. And then usually it puts a hurting on me. But a very fair, fun, and extremely kind of, I think, unique course around here in terms of the layout. So I'm very excited to get out to Totter Ridge next week, not only because it'll be 2 days down at the Masters and we'll be approaching moving day, like I said, but because I'm excited to get out on the course as well and also throw some pictures out there and stuff like that. For those of you that haven't checked out the course yet, you should. I'll be putting stuff up on Instagram. Just very pumped to get that part of the Going Low experience going. As we always do, you probably can guess that at least these first couple shows we followed a bit of a format, you might say, because I think you can only look forward and evaluate what's going on in present day golf by looking backwards. And we had a big one last week at Memorial Park in Houston, a course that gets 60,000 rounds per year, but a course that Tom Doak fixed up and renovated and made it, you know, a PGA Tour caliber stop. It was very wet. It was preferred lies for multiple days. And the net effect of that was you had low scores. Once it started to dry out and once these guys really could just take dead aim before the course ever really firmed up. I don't think it really truly ever did. Maybe you got a little bit of that on Sunday, but you got super low scores. I do not think that that is always necessarily a course that's going to yield them, because the green complexes, if it's playing firm and fast, which frankly the tour doesn't want it to because they want it to simulate the lush kind of conditions of Augusta National. But if that course is playing firm and fast, it's a course that can keep scores from getting too out of whack and too out of control. Guys, pardon the pun, have trouble going too low, but they did not have trouble doing that in this this edition of the Texas Children's Hospital's Open. They just went crazy. Minwoo Lee got the jump on everybody and won this thing 20 under par, one clear of Scottie Scheffler, who charged very hard on Sunday, one clear of Gary Woodland, who charged even harder than Scheffler for one of his best finishes in a very long time. Two major champions trying to hunt down a guy who didn't have a single PGA Tour win to his credit. And so in that sense, you got a breakthrough win. You got Minwoo Lee getting something that, you know, the tour wants this. And I want this as a golf fan. I mean, you want to see, I think I said this a lot about Victor Hovland, who's interesting in a different way than Minwoo Lee. You want the game to be, I think, a little more international, just because that's always going to keep eyeballs sort of sucked in. It's always a little different, too. I think, you know, when you think about the Ryder Cup, you just want a general, I know Minwoo Lee is Australian, so it's not the same thing, but you want a general international presence so that President's Cup, Ryder Cup, always feel like they've got a little juice, because it feels like the other, the international teams got like a real puncher's chance. I think you want the game to be global. I think it just, you know, it makes it more interesting as an American viewer when so many of the top players, now you've got Rahm, granted he's on the LIV Tour, but you've got Ludvig Åberg, you've got Hovland, you've got a kind of distinct international flair to that top 20 or so. Tyrrell Hatton is another one. To go with the usual spate of super strong American players, I think it just makes it a more lively experience. Just like Seve, when he was in his prime, you didn't see him very often because he didn't come over here to play, but it livened things up significantly. So it's a breakthrough for Minwoo Lee. He had to go and get up and down from behind 18 green. I give him a lot of credit. He had a terrific lag putt, had the old Texas wedge out. Dr. Chapinski, ironically enough, as he likes to go by on social media, decided to just putt the ball, proved to be a perfect play. I am a huge fan of the fact that the man did aim point on a 6-inch putt as a joke, as a little bit. I thought that was a great little bit of personality. I just kept saying, please don't kick that ball. Please don't accidentally kick that ball while you're going up there to goof around for a second. But he did not, and it was very cool. It's good for the tour that Minwoo Lee wins, simply, like, whether you like this or not, like, this reality, you know, say, like, oh, well, you know, I wish the best players were, you know, Scottie Scheffler is the best player in the world, and he's fairly boring. He gives, like, slightly more interesting interview answers these days, and he gets a little chippy, which is nice, but, like, for better or worse, the game plays out a lot on social media, and Minwoo Lee is one of the stars of social media for the PGA Tour. Like I said, Chef Minwoo Lee, Let Chef Cook. It's all that stuff. It's the Let Russ Cook version of for golf. Dr. Chapinski, he's got all these nicknames, big personality, easy dude to like because he, you know, he seems like he actually enjoys being a pro golfer. He definitely opens up his world a little bit to people on social media. And so anytime you have a guy like that, the hope has to the trailing hope has to be, hey, like, I hope this dude's game actually translates, and I hope this dude is actually capable of backing up all the personality and the swashbuckling and everything like that when he's actually on the course. And he had the stigma that some guys have had to try to overcome of can't win on the big boy tour. He came into this tournament last week at Memorial Park, and he had one win on the Asian tour. He had three wins on the European tour. But as a man named Tommy Fleetwood can tell you, that doesn't get you a whole lot with the American audience if you have not broken through yet on this tour. So it is a breakthrough in that very literal sense for Minwoo Lee. He now is going to be always known as a PGA Tour winner. Minwoo Lee is not just somebody who's all hype. Minwoo Lee now has some substance to go with everything that he does off the golf course that people enjoy so much. And I do think it'll legitimize him for a lot of people. Because it's not like... The other thing is, too, it kind of matters to me where you get your first win. I mean, getting one is still better than not getting one. So Joe Highsmith getting one at a watered-down, Cognizant Classic, where there's some names in the field, but there's not the names. That's nice, but you always wonder, what would so-and-so have done? Well, you know, he's got Scotty chasing him down on the final day, shooting 7-under. He's got Gary Woodland, who is not a Scotty-level name, but Gary Woodland has won a major. He's won a U.S. Open, and Gary Woodland, you know, knows how to close the deal. When he's playing really well, he's as good as just about anybody. Hits it a long way. He had Rory McIlroy T5. Like, it was a big boy leaderboard that was trying to flag down Minwoo Lee. And so I think it was at a good venue, in my opinion. I think Memorial Park is a good PGA Tour venue. I wish it had not rained so much so it didn't turn into just a dart throwing fest. But I think it's a good venue, and it was a good field. And so when you find a way to get your first win in those conditions, I do think it carries a little bit more weight for the trajectory and the arc of your career than it maybe otherwise would. Now, having said all that, and having properly, I think, given Minwoo Lee his flowers for this performance, I will say there are first wins, right? There's you getting your first win as a golfer. And then there are what I would call breakout performances, where you announce yourself. And there's a way in which you played the game that everybody is forced to sit up and take notice of. There's a way maybe you worked your way around the course. At the risk of being unfair, like, I think breakout wins usually happen if you lap the field by 4 or 5. I mean, Tiger goes and wins the Masters, for example. Now, Minwoo gets his first, but Tiger wins the Masters by 12 shots in 97. Okay, that's an announcement. That's like a seismic moment in the history of golf. You could go and point to any other guy getting a win. Oberg had a big win earlier this year that felt like an announcement. Like, oh man, this is a tough venue. This dude just stared down this very tough venue in a good field, and he won. And we've talked about him because of his pedigree and because of where he's already finished in some big majors. We've talked about Ludvig Oberg as this next big thing and all that, right? So there are breakout performances, and then there are just what I would call first wins. I will say this about what Minwoo Lee did in Houston. That felt to me like more a first win and not a breakout performance for this reason. If you watch that tournament, you probably saw all the rain and the way it affected the course. There's a lot of water. There's water and there's green complexes that are complicated at that course. That's the defense for Memorial Park, especially when they're overseeding the fairways, especially when they want it to play lush. He was banging the ball all over creation. He was occasionally missing his spot by, like, I don't know, 60 yards, I think, by his own admission off the tee. He hits the ball a long, long way. He was way ahead of Scottie Scheffler on a lot of tee shots. Like, he was 30 yards clear of him. Scottie can hit it far, but I don't think Scottie is known as being a guy who's trying to get it to 325 every time he puts the peg in the ground. So Minwoo Lee was playing a course that, even though there is water and even though the greens are kind of funky, there are spots at Memorial Park, lots of them, more so than like maybe your average tour course, where you can blow it off the property practically. I mean, you can hit it, you know, halfway off the planet, and you can still be in a situation where you've got to look. And that's what I felt like he did in this tournament. He didn't get punished for stuff the way he, I think, will at other tour courses. Sometimes at major setups, I mean, you think about U.S. Open setups, if he's spraying the ball like that off the tee, he's not going to be contending. I don't care how strong the guy is or anything like that. You spray the ball. There's only one Bryson at Wingfoot, let's put it that way, where you just bomb and gouge the place into submission. He's a bomb and gouge guy to me. If I'm going to use a cross-sport comparison, he reminds me of an NBA player who doesn't have a mid-range game, which is a lot of guys now because nobody wants them to. He shoots a ton of threes. He's good at it. He dunks a lot. He's explosive. He wants to get right to the rack, shoot threes, dunk the ball, and if he doesn't do that, get fouled. Like that's the golf strategy that we see play out. And we see it with him and with a lot of guys. So I don't want to bash him or say that he's some sort of uniquely one-dimensional player. I mean, this is what the tour has been rewarding for a long time, and so this is what every young player is generally speaking trying to do. They are trying to bomb it, they are trying to gouge it out of there, and then they are trying to putt it. He does putt the crap out of the ball. I mean, he putts it very well. I think his short game is obviously pretty good, pretty creative. You don't give yourself a nickname and not get laughed out of the building if people don't generally think it's pretty accurate. So that's how the Dr. Chipinski thing is stuck. But I don't know if I see in Minwoo Lee the level of game that suggests that this is a harbinger of major things to come, either that he wins a major tournament or that you suddenly are seeing Minwoo Lee like routinely challenging guys and racking up victories at various tour events. So that's kind of how I took this one. I also cannot help but notice very quickly that slow play was again a story in the tour on a last group where Alejandro Tosti is allegedly playing slow because he's disgusted that Minwoo Lee is playing slow because Minwoo Lee's taking like 15 minutes for an unplayable ruling that he probably could have just gone about and handled differently anyway. A hole took them 30 minutes to play. I don't like watching slow golf. I just like to see a little bit faster play, generally speaking. That's why I like Oberg so much, because he just, you know, see ball, hit ball. But it was impossible not to notice that slow play again was at least one of the storylines in this tournament. So shout out to Minwoo Lee, though. A first win. I don't think a breakout win, but it's always good when some of the guys that people know from social media start to know them because they're actually winning tournaments and cashing major checks. And now he's somebody, whether you think he's like a serious contender or not, you're going to have to keep your eye on him at Augusta National. Just because if a guy wins this close to the Masters, you automatically put him on the list of, okay, this is somebody I'm going to file away, and this is somebody that I think has to be taken seriously. Coming up next, I think the real story of what happened at the Texas Children's Hospitals Open, I think the real story there was, in fact, not Minwoo Lee. When we're talking about the real story being, you know, we look ahead to the Masters, the real story was not the guy who won it. The real story was a couple of the guys who were trying to chase him down and the form that they were showing. We'll talk about them coming up next. And I also am going to tell you about a player who has won a major, won majors actually, who is getting literally almost no recognition, not even close to being taken seriously as a threat to win the Masters coming up in a week. I'll tell you who that is as we continue on Going Low. Coming up next, Chris Muller, 93.7 The Fan.
Carter's has your family covered for every summer first. First steps, first swim lesson, or first sleepover. Our clothes help kids and parents have their best summer ever, thanks to comfy design and easy dressing details. Generations of families have trusted our must-haves for babies, toddlers, and kids. Designed to shine season after season. Visit Carter's.com to shop the latest styles or find a Carter's store near you.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Spring is finally here, and it's that time of year when plans start becoming real. Trips are getting booked, the calendar is filling up, and the energy is shifting. Make this season count. By starting right now, you'll hit summer already feeling more confident speaking and understanding a brand new language. Whether you're prepping for a dream vacation, reconnecting with your family heritage, or just finally checking learn a new language off your bucket list, Rosetta Stone is the way to go. They've been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years because they skip the the boring stuff. There's no memorizing random vocabulary lists or leaning on chunky translations. Instead, their intuitive method helps you naturally absorb the language by connecting words and visuals to real-world meaning. It's about learning in context, the way language was actually meant to be learned. As a trusted expert with millions of users, Rosetta Stone offers 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. It really is the ultimate tool for genuine growth. Ready to start learning a new language this spring? Visit rosettastone.com/RS10 today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/RS10 now and begin your language learning journey.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now, or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
It is the Going Low Show. Chris Mueller, welcome back in this stormy Saturday morning. It sounded like about 3 inches of rain were dumped on my house and probably all of your houses overnight, which means I have two dogs that are completely petrified and still sitting next to me in here. Do not want to be left alone. If you have not, you haven't really lived until you've had like a 35 or so pound dog just basically jump on your head in the middle of the night to wake you up because he's scared. So just it was a nice entry point into my Saturday morning. Hope you're having a good one, though. Hope your Saturday coffee is smooth right now. So there's not, I'll admit this straight away. There is not a ton that I have found super compelling about the Valero Texas Open, which is obviously going on right now. Like, I certainly could say a bunch. I could say, hey, obviously you got a major champion in Brian Harman who's winning this thing. He's four clear of the field. There are some names that I think are, like, worth watching. Guys, you know, who Daniel Berger's won, like guys who I think have big time game. And, you know, if they were to get a win, you kind of like mark that off and say, okay, he's playing really well coming up for next week. It's just for whatever reason for me, the course TPC San Antonio does not do a lot for me on TV. I don't know how many of you are like actual course nerds. Obviously, that's what everyone loves about Augusta and the pageantry and everything else and the tradition. But like, there are certain courses that I think pop better and look better and generally just acquit themselves better on television. And for whatever reason, TPC San Antonio, it's the Oaks course. I don't know. It just does not really stand out to me. I mean, Harman, the way he's playing, is probably going to get this thing close to 20 under par. And it just feels more like a last crack for certain guys that need to win their way in. But more than anything, it just kind of feels like it's a tournament. You know, it's the tournament before the tournament. It's the, I'm trying to think, like maybe NIT or something, although that runs concurrently. But you know what I mean. It just does not do a ton. Tony Finau making an ace when he had to basically make the cut is pretty interesting, though, something that happened here. Harman is a guy, I will say this quickly about it, before we get back to some of the players that I felt like, you know, were very relevant and are very worth talking about here leading up to the Masters. Harman is a dude, and Augusta has traditionally not been all that kind to left-handers. I know Mike Weir obviously won it, Phil won it, but other than Phil, really, and other than this one Mike Weir situation, I haven't seen, like, you know, you don't routinely see maybe guys climbing up the leaderboard. You got to be a lefty who really loves to cut the ball at Augusta, because it's really set up as a right-handed hitter's drawing paradise. You think about like drawing it around the corner on 13. You think about a lot of the holes tilt, and it favors for a right-handed player if you can either just hit it dead straight, which a ton of these guys do, or if you can curve the ball reliably without overcooking it a little bit right to left. But Harman, as much as he drives me nuts because he plays slower than a glacier would, Harmon is a dude, and he is somebody who has proven that he can not only win a major, but that he's got the game to run away and hide. Like, I think it's one thing to win one as somebody who does not emerge just from the mists, but as like a solid name. It's another thing altogether to put up a number like he did at the Open Championship and just, you know, kind of peace out and wave to everybody. So he's four clear, and because he's got that on his resume in the past, I will say that him playing this well does have me taking him pretty seriously. So if he closes the show here, I think that that's something definitively worth keeping tabs on heading into next week. Having said that, I told you that I thought the biggest story at the Texas Children's Houston Open was not so much Minwoo Lee, although that was a great story for the tour, a marketable young star sort of getting a breakout victory. For me, the story of that tournament was the form being displayed by some of the guys chasing him. And that leads off, no matter what, with Scottie Scheffler. I mean, think about this with Scheffler for a minute. He does not look that happy with his game still. He is like at his best, I would say, this ultra stoic, like affable guy who doesn't really, in his prime, he was so dominant for that like run last year. He's still in his prime, but I should say in the midst of that truly insane run, other than him getting arrested briefly at the PGA, he never looks when he's playing. Like, he would bother me if I played him in, you know, if I were a PGA Tour golfer and I were that caliber of player and I had to deal with him in a match play event. Knowing how I am wired, the way he handles his business on the course would be very unsettling to me. Because Scottie Scheffler does something that I think is hard even for the best players in the world to do. And that's usually does not get visibly annoyed when things don't go his way on the golf course. You just don't really see him like lash out, smash club, do what, you know, just look like he's losing his composure. I mean, there are some guys who, like, Tyrrell Hatton thrives on looking like he's ready to snap his clubs over his knee like he's Bo Jackson. I mean, he's like legitimately one of the angriest looking players on tour on a, you know, no, he's on the LIV tour, but on a tournament-to-tournament basis, like, Hatton looks like, and shot-to-shot basis, Hatton looks like he's ready to, like, boil over at any moment in time. And Scheffler, to his credit, almost always has just been like, hey, I'm an affable guy, you know, yeah, did I hit this one, did I spray this one slightly? Sure. No big deal. Like, he's more known for going, oh, no, I shanked it on a shot that ends up 30 feet from the hole. There's a video of it. You can go look it up. He goes, oh, I shanked it. And the announcers are all confused because the ball just lands 30 feet away on the green. Like, I don't know if he makes the putt or not. It doesn't really matter. But, like, it serves to underscore how good he is and how his, like, his version of shanking is wildly different from mine or yours. And the one thing that's been different about him this year, I use that as a backdrop to say, say all that as a backdrop to say this. The one thing that's been different about Scheffler is since he's come back from the wine glass injury and the hand surgery, he has not looked happy with his game. He has looked like a guy who's getting ticked off more easily than usual. You know, Ted Scott is not just cruising along there on the bag. Like, occasionally Scotty is seeming like he wants to get a little pugnacious and get argumentative. He has been moaning and groaning about, hey, the wind touched this ball. How did it do that? Why did it do that? The net effect of it, I think, has been to probably create the impression that Scottie Scheffler is really off his game. Like, the net effect of it is to create this impression that, ooh, Scottie, something must be going on there. You know, he didn't do this or he didn't do that. And the funny thing is, Scottie is, I guess like you would say he's quote-unquote struggled, but it's just because his standards are so bonkers compared to everybody else's. He has made six starts this year. His worst finish is T25. He's got a T20 sitting in there. In six tournaments, he has three top tens. He's got a pair of top threes, including the runner-up in Houston last week. So think about that. We're saying, player is struggling, man. He doesn't quite look like himself. half of his tournaments he's been in the top 10. A third of his tournaments that he's teed it up this year, he's been in the top three. He's had a legitimate shot to win at least two of them. Maybe you could argue all three of the top 10s. He has, by any measure that you would want to take, he has played good golf. But the standard there is just so overwhelming that it sucks all the oxygen out of the room when we're talking about him. It does, however, appear, and this is why to me he's a story coming out of that tournament last week, it appears he's rounding into top form. His ball striking has not been quite to the degree that I think we expect out of him. Like, it hasn't been overwhelming Scheffler, where strokes gained in terms of tee to green, you just gawk because nobody's even close. But he has still been pretty phenomenal. I have his Data Golf page up right now. Strokes gained on approach is still stupid good compared to the rest of the tour. His strokes gained approach, three. It's basically, he's still the best iron player on tour in almost every metric, even if it doesn't quite feel that way. The numbers are still there. And what that looks like at a tournament like the Masters is Scotty hits the fairway. Scotty then, with an iron in his hand, just keeps routinely putting the ball between 10 and 20 feet away every single time, like monotonously, and then makes enough of the putts to run away with it. So if he's putting at all, if he's normal Scotty Scheffler, I think at the Masters you have to take him as a serious threat like you always do. Rory, T5 in Houston. And Rory, I'm gonna wear out this kind of statement about him. Who knows what I'm going to sound like a week from now. He's either going to be right in the thick of things at Augusta, and maybe I'll be eating some of these words, or maybe what I am saying here is going to look prescient, and I will gloat and cheer and do a little dance. Not that I want to see him do poorly at all. I don't. Until I see Rory McIlroy pouring in putts with regularity. I know he was T5. He was five shots off the pace. It's not like he had a bad week. Until I see him making the testy 6 and even 5 footers, the ones that like sustain the momentum of a round that's really going well, the ones that get the roars going so other people have to take notice, uh-oh, guess who's climbing up the leaderboard. Until he's making pretty much all of those, I just still cannot extend to him the benefit of the doubt that he is going to, at a tournament that is often defined by who putts it the best at the Masters. It is hard for me to extend Rory the benefit of the doubt that he's going to get it done. He's another player, too, where admittedly, as I say some of this stuff about him, I concede that like the numbers do not so much back me up. He's actually been a better putter than Scheffler this year. He's been a better putter than this mystery golfer that I'm going to tell you about in a minute, who I think has been playing basically as well as anybody on tour this year and is not getting discussed at all as a favorite in the Masters. He's been a better putter than a bunch of different guys you could name, but it's one of those few times for me where the numbers do feel like they lie a little bit. It does not feel like I am watching a guy who is one of the better putters on tour. When he putts it like really well, then he romps. When he putts it poorly like he did at the Genesis, he barely topped 20s. I just don't trust it to happen at the Masters till I see it. I'll name you one guy that I think is going in the wrong direction as we head to Augusta. Ludvig Åberg, not great right now. Missed the cut for the second straight time. He missed it at the Players. Åberg's got a win this year. If he hadn't gotten sick after the first round at the Farmers, he probably would have won that tournament too. You kind of forget, since he shot 74, 75, 79. He shot 63 the first day. He was going to maybe run away and hide from the field, and he would have two wins, and you wouldn't think about two missed cuts as much. He is not playing well enough, period. I mean, these are tournaments he's missing the cut where at the Players the first 2 days, it was a birdie fest for a lot of these guys. At the Valero, it's been a birdie fest. He was going to tune up and get ready. The fact that he's not playing the weekend, I mean, I'm the biggest Ludvig fan there is. You know, because I talk about him on the show a lot. He has not flashed the form recently. He drives it so well. He hits it so straight that when he's putting it reasonably well, like a lot of these guys, you can pencil him in as being right near the top of the lead. He has not been great around the greens, I would say, and he has not been maybe as accurate as I would expect him to be. So the driver has not found the fairway as much as I would have expected it to, and the form, as much as I want to give this guy the benefit of the doubt, just does not warrant me doing so. Now, a couple minutes here before we go into a full-on Masters preview, and I got a couple other fun little nuggets to share for you at the end of the show coming up in about 15 minutes. One name that I think is just, you want to talk about like completely under the radar, and you want to talk about a guy who just is not getting discussed really at all, and it almost is like unnerving because I'm wondering, what am I missing here? Colin Morikawa. Check this out. This is a tweet from Kyle Porter, does a great golf newsletter. I'm going to retweet this out there right now from my regular account. And just to put this out there for people, Colin Morikawa right now leads the world in strokes gained on approach in 2025. He leads, this is as of April 2nd, leads the world in strokes gained ball striking, leads the world in strokes gained tee to green in 2025, leads the world in strokes gained overall in 2025. He is one of, as Kyle points out, two players to finish in the top 10 of the Masters each of the last 3 years. The other is Scottie Scheffler. I think you're familiar with Scottie's game at the Masters. He was in the final pairing last year. He has won a pair of majors, two different ones, by the way. One which usually in the PGA is a birdie fest, and one at the Open Championship can be about anything. He is definitively, as Kyle Porter points out, not one of the top three favorites. He just isn't. You can look at Masters betting lines, and here it is. Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy. Like, those are your three in this order, though. Scheffler plus 400, McIlroy plus 650, Rahm plus 1300, Oberg, who I just got done talking about, plus 1600, Morikawa plus 1800. He's got the same odds as Xander. And Xander's been kind of slow to pick up the pace. Here's the skinny, the 4-1-1 on Morikawa. If you're a person who likes to put a fun money, you know, just put a couple dollars down on somebody, if he putts it at all, if he plays the way he's been playing this year at Augusta, if he strikes the golf ball at the way he has been, if he putts it at all, you can pretty much pencil him in to be in one of the last two or three groups in the tournament. If he putts it pretty well, he's going to win the tournament the way he's been hitting the ball. Now, a lot of ifs can happen and everything else, but like, That is a guy flying very low under the radar for how dominant he has been playing. Just terrifically, terrifically dominant performance. And nobody's talking about it. So now you can't say that going low ignored it. Going low, we reminded you. That dude has been on a tear. Coming up, the Masters is next week. Have you heard? I will be handicapping the field. Couple guys whose chances I want to go over with you. I just named a couple players, Scottie especially, Rory as well, and Morikawa for sure, who I think are going to be factors in this. I'm going to name a small handful of players. I have a group of five coming up that I do think the winner will come from. And the spoiler alert for you is, you haven't heard me say at least three of these names so far on today's show. I made an eclectic list of five players that I think could actually get this green jacket coming up here. I also will be throwing out a shout-out. Got a great piece of listener mail. I wanted to give some credit to it. Had a lot of fun reading it. It was a great little reminiscing by a former caddy at Oakmont. I'll tell you about that coming up as well. Going Low Show, we finish off this week. Coming up next, Chris Muller on The Fan. Live from Chateau Muller, it is the Going Low Show. Thanks for joining me on a Saturday morning. I hope yours is going well. I hope you are, if you're playing golf today, I was going to say, I hope you're playing today, but if you're playing golf today, you've got like some real sicko tendencies because I'm not sure how many courses are even going to be open given the amount of rain that washed through. Now, I love to walk when I play, so that's usually never a problem. When somebody says cart path only, I chuckle and say, ha ha ha. Wasn't going to do that anyway. But if you're playing today, God bless you, because it's going to be soggy out there. Need to give a shout out right now to Ed W. I don't want to air out Ed's full name, but Ed W. We get letters once in a while at the station. I'll take you a peek behind the curtain. Usually if there's something addressed to me, I would say 70% of the time, a handwritten letter or even a typed out letter that is addressed to me is something snarky about, like, I don't like this or that that you do. Comes with the territory. I do not bring it up to say, woe is me. It's kind of a funny thing. Every so often, though, like, I would say this is 10% of letters. You get something like what our friend Ed W. sent, which was a lengthy but very engaging, very well-read, or very well-written, excuse me, set of stories of his time as an Oakmont caddy. Now, this is 50 years ago or thereabouts, even 55 years ago. But Ed wrote it was about 10, 12 pages of tales of being a caddy at various events at the 73 U.S. Open, at an event at Laurel Valley, a PGA sort of two-ball event, the U.S. Amateur at Oakmont in 1969. I just wanted to give Ed a shout-out if he's listening right now. It was extremely engaging to read these stories. Apparently, I found out, thanks to this, that the late Hubert Green was quite the ladies' man, among other things. It had it all. Had a near miss where our friend Ed here might have had a chance to caddy for Arnold Palmer on the weekend at the U.S. Open. Just really fun stories. Kind of paints a very colorful picture of life as a caddy back then. It's obviously such a professional, specialized job now. It doesn't have quite the same, I'm trying to think of the right word. It doesn't have quite the same rough around the edges reputation that maybe it had during Caddyshack. I mean, the idea that Oakmont caddies were just going to be assigned to you, I think as a pro is foreign. And the fact that those caddies were assigned by allegedly blind draw, which may or may not have been rigged in the case of one caddy, as Ed's story goes. I just thought it was all very, very interesting stuff. I really enjoyed reading it. So I wanted to give Ed W., who's out there in Plum, a shout-out because I thought it was great. I thought it was really fun to read. I'm reading a couple golf books right now, and it was as pleasant and as engaging as any of those have been as far as a peek behind the curtain. So a thank you to listener Ed for that. That was fun. I want to give you a quick Masters handicap right now from my vantage point. I think there are a couple, when you're kind of like breaking this down, I do think there are a handful of guys from LIV that need to be on your radar. One is Tyrrell Hatton. I've mentioned him a bunch. Tyrrell Hatton is one of those players who I think people might not be aware is pretty close to the top 15 in the world. I mean, he's one of the best players on the planet. He does not, of all the people who are in the official world golf ranking, Scotty's one, Rory's two, Schauffele is still three, Morikawa's four, Oberg is five, Victor Hovland's way up there. Hatton is just, he's an animal. I mean, he's a beast. And he is somebody who I think requires that he be taken seriously anytime he's in a tournament because he's that good. Hideki Matsuyama, another really good player, obviously. There's a couple other guys who are in the top 10 here who I'm going to name as part of my picks, my five-pack picks, so I won't say any more. Tyrrell Hatton's a guy I would watch coming from the LIV ranks. This one feels like I am giving this guy way too much credit because I think he has like lost his form a little bit. I don't know if it's just the whole idea that in LIV, I think for some of these guys, it's tough to simulate anything close to the level of actual competition that you would face on the PGA Tour, and it's tough to kind of get gassed up for that week after week when it's kind of a silly, let's be honest, it's kind of just like a silly, sort of a silly way to play golf. You know, 54 holes, this team functionality. Cam Smith is a guy who I will never just abandon and say, Cam Smith, he's whatever, he's fallen off the planet. He's a guy that when it's a major with how great of a putter he is, and I think he is a terrific one, he's somebody who I'm going to at least give credence to in a tournament like the Masters. When the guy gets the ball rolling, on the greens, he's as good as anybody, and that can carry you. Rahm is obviously one. Bryson's a weird one. Remember when Bryson said he like was treating Augusta like a par 68 or something like that? It was typical like bluster from Bryson. It kind of rubbed the usual set of people who get annoyed with him the wrong way. That year, I believe, I want to say he missed the cut, which kind of was an ironic twist. You think this course is so easy for you. You go out there, you get absolutely beaten up by this course. I think Bryson is a better golfer now than he was when he said that. I think the way he handled Pinehurst last year down the stretch, hit every shot, bodes well for him. He is dangerous because if he's hitting it in play, you know, as quirky as he is, the short game's great, the putting is very good. He's somebody I keep an eye on. Brooks Koepka is the last one, and that might surprise some people because I think for a lot of people, Brooks Koepka is out of sight, out of mind too. I think Brooks Koepka is also the clearest case of a guy that if he could probably, maybe not do it over again, but if he could sneak his way out of LIV right now, I think he would be happy to do that. So he's not going to obviously show up near the top of any world rankings right now, but the guy's won five majors. I mean, period, point blank. Like, the dude goes out there, and when the tournaments are the biggest, it's very obvious that he is he's a big game hunter, and I will never count him out. I like the way he plays. I like the way he attacks it. I think there's a lot left in the tank with him. He's in his mid-30s. His prime should not be over yet, given when he started winning. He should have at least a couple more years where he's near one of the best golfers in the world. Hits it plenty far enough. Pretty nervy putter, I think, and I mean that in a good way. Makes a lot of the putts you need to make. So I think Brooks has to be somebody taken seriously. Names like Denny McCarthy are fun as a Masters like long shot pick. Guys like that are fun to watch. When you just I say a name like Denny McCarthy because I just say him as like an archetype of a kind of player who tends to do well. Like anybody, I like picking guys who can do one thing, and that's putt, because it's the kind of tournament that rewards that. I had to double check to make sure old Denny was even in the field. He is. McCarthy just being somebody that's a phenomenal putter, one of the maybe the best guy on tour right now. Like modern day Lauren Roberts, boss of the Moss. You take them seriously in this kind of a tournament. I would love to see, just because I think it would be interesting, like a Phil or a Freddie Couples still lingering around the leaderboard. I guess Freddie just always ends up coming out and playing pretty well at this. Phil, obviously, he was in contention in 2023. I mean, Phil has been kind of ageless in this regard. His game has aged really well. It's one of the courses that's still on tour that he could still play at a pretty high level. That would be, that would grab headlines if he was still hanging in there. I'm not feeling great about Ludvig Åberg. I do not feel great about Victor Hovland, mainly because Victor Hovland told us he doesn't still know where the ball is going half the time when he's hitting it. This is going to be it. I have my winner coming from this group of five. And now before you get mad at me for this, before you say, well, Chris, after you hear like the first two names, you're going to say, well, wait a minute. Like, that's stupid. You've picked some chalky stuff here. Go look at, do you want to be interesting or do you want to be right, is my question. You know, the NCAA tournament had all four number one seeds get to the final. I think I maybe had one interloper there. I think I had Michigan State or somebody sneaking in. I mean, do you want to be right or do you want to be interesting? That's my question. Here is my group of five. I think the Masters winner is going to come from this group. One is Scottie Scheffler. Water wet, mud dirty, sun bright. I mean, he is still the apex of the game. He is still the standard by which every other player ought to be measured. I am not going to try to reinvent the wheel here. For reasons I do not need to go into too much depth on, Scottie Scheffler is my pick. He is my actual pick, but he is the leadoff man. He is the battleship on my group of five. Second, because I tried to get you hip to him, Colin Morikawa. If he putts well, he's going to be right there and he'll win it, potentially. The iron game is good enough. He doesn't hit it that far with the driver, but he's so good with the irons that it doesn't matter. He has been terrific in almost every ball striking stat you can sort through. How do I really know Morikawa is an interesting pick? Because Pony, who is a complete psycho about getting any betting edge he can, clearly was seeing the same stuff I was about Colin Morikawa and I think has already put a bet in on him. Now, if that makes you want to go the other way and say he has no chance to win, I understand. But the people who like to try to gather as much information quietly as possible, like Colin Morikawa. Third one is Tyrrell Hatton. You heard me say why. Tyrrell Hatton's just really good. It's easy for some of these live guys to become out of sight, out of mind when you don't see them very often. Tyrrell Hatton is one of the 20 best players in the world, probably closer to one of the 15 best players in the world. When he's on, is one of the 10 best players in the world. And I think that that's a course that suits him well. Justin Thomas is the next one. I've seen it the same way other people have. I mean, he's in a duel at the Copperhead course, at the Valspar with Victor Hovland late. He's playing, by and large, very good golf. You know the game is there at the high end for Justin Thomas. It's just a matter of, does it all come together? If he I sound like a broken record here, but it's true. If he putts it, he does everything else well enough that if the putts are going in, he's going to be a force. The last guy is kind of the closest thing to a wild card I will give you. And I admit that I'm giving you a player who is ranked right near the top. He is a top 10 player in the world, and he is probably the most anonymous of the top 10, and that's Russell Henley. I think Russell Henley has a very good shot. Russell Henley does everything well. Russell Henley, the only thing he does not do is hit the ball far. He putts it better than tour average. He drives it more accurately than tour average. He's a better iron player than tour average. He is a better player around the greens than tour average. The only area where he loses about a stroke is that he doesn't hit the ball very far. But when you do everything else well, and really well, compared to the average tour pro, I think that makes you a potential force. So Russell Henley is going to be my little wild card name for you in the five-pack of Masters champions. So it's going to be Scotty. The champion will come from Scotty, Morikawa, Tyrrell Hatton, Justin Thomas, and Russell Henley. And if I'm wrong, I'll pretend I never said any of this. That's it for Going Low for today. Panther Insider Show, Pat Bostic is next. I am very excited. I'll be out on the road for Going Low next week at Totteridge Golf Club, one of the absolute best public tracks you can play. One of the best tracks, period, in Greater Pittsburgh. We will be emanating live from there 7 o'clock next Saturday, and we'll have two rounds of the Masters under our belt to talk about as well. Talk to you then or on the PM team Monday at 2 o'clock. See ya.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks, no cash access, and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Each year, KellyBlueBook.com ranks vehicles on the road for predicted future resale value. And for 2026, Toyota dominates the top of the list. 4Runner ranks number 3. The Tundra is number 2. And the Tacoma is number 1 overall again. The fact is, Toyota works hard on both ends of ownership. With special low APR financing rates available on Tacoma and Tundra right now at your local Toyota dealer. But also because you're getting trucks that are built to lead in affordability tomorrow. 4Runner, Tundra, and Tacoma are all expected to vastly outperform the average vehicle in resale value after 5 years of ownership, according to KBB, which can mean thousands more in your pocket when it's time to sell or trade in. That kind of affordability is hard to find anywhere else. So stop by your local Toyota dealer or visit Toyota.com and start shopping today. Projected resale value information is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.